Gandhimaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhakti Rinda Ki Jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Sri Mati Bhakti Vinata Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvasesis and Yavadi Paskatyade Sitarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunatham Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanshakalpa Jubhishcha Kripasindhya Vitapaditanam Pavanevi Odaisha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. October 3rd, 2022, in Hillsborough, North Carolina, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 39, Text 30. Yo nakshaye rajam ananta sakaparito. Gopar vishankura rajas churitalakashak. Venam kvanam smita kataksha nirikshanena.
Venam kvanam smita kataksha nirikshanena.
Chittam shitnojya mumrite nukatam bhavema.
Chittam shitnojya mumrite nukatam bhavena. Yo nakshare rajamate.
At the demise.
At the demise.
Rajam, the village of Raja,
Ananta,
of Ananta, Lord Balaram,
Sakaha,
the friend Krishna,
Paritaha,
accompanied on all sides, Gopai, by the cowherd boys,
Vishan,
entering,
Kura,
of the hoofprints of the cows.
Rajaha,
with the dust. Churita,
smeared.
Alaka, the locks of his hair. Shruk, and his garlands. Venam,
his flute.
Kvanam,
playing.
Smita,
smiling.
Kataaksha,
from the corners of his eyes.
Nirikshanena, with glances.
Chittam,
our minds.
Kshinoti,
he destroys.
Amum,
him.
Rite,
without.
Nu,
indeed.
Katam,
how.
Bhavema,
we can exist. And this is the gopis with Krishna's imminent departure from Vrindavan with Akura. How can we exist without Ananta's friend Krishna, who in the evening would return to Raja in the company of the cowherd boys, his hair and garland powdered with the dust raised by the cow's hooves? As he played his flute, he would captivate our minds with his smiling, sidelong glances. So there's no BBT purport. I will go to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. His commentary. The gopi said, "Moreover, we will die this very evening. At the end of the day, Krishna, that friend of Balaram, would vibrate his flute while entering Raja, gaze upon our breasts, and captivate our hearts with his sidelong glances. How will we live without Krishna? If we do not receive that glance this evening, how will we maintain our lives?" We'll read Sanatana Goswami's. Jiva Goswami's is practically the same, so we'll just read Sanatana Goswami's. Ananta is one name of Sankarsana or Balaram, since he is white like Ananta and has unlimited strength like Ananta. Like Krishna, Balaram has many well-known names in Vraja. Ananta Sakaha therefore means the friend of Balaram or along with Balaram. So these sort of commentaries are very important because Ananta literally means what?
Unlimited.
So it could just mean the friend of the unlimited. But here our acharyas are saying this Ananta is referring to the person Balaram. Accompanied by Balaram, surrounded by cowherd boys, Krishna entered Vraja in the evening. He would bewilder our hearts with prema by his soft smile and his side glance looking at our breasts. Nu indicates worry. How can we exist without him? We will die now, right here. Yonak shayev rajamananta saka parito gopar vishankura pajasturi ta lakashrak vainam shvanam smitakatak shanyarip shanena chittam shichnochamumrite nukatam bhavena. How can we exist without Ananta's friend Krishna, who in the evening would return to Vraja in the company of the cowherd boys, his hair and garland powdered with the dust raised by the cow's hooves? As he played his flute, he would captivate our minds with his smiling, sidelong glances. So generally, we want to live because we want to enjoy in this world and fulfill our plans for enjoyment. Okay? Prabhupada would sometimes refer to some wealthy man that he knew who was at the point of death and said to his doctor, "My dear doctor, I have some uncompleted plans. Can you artificially somehow make me live 4 more years so I can finish my plans?" So this is generally why people want to live. I'm sure you all know that there's actually certain times of the year when people are more or less likely to die. Yes? People are likely to die like right after their birthday or right after Christmas or right after their child's or grandchild's wedding. You know, if they're already sick with something, they already have some terminal illness, somehow, you know, I want to stay alive to see this thing, to enjoy this. But the devotees are thinking, the pure devotees are thinking, I want to live to serve Krishna, and if I can't serve Krishna, what is the use of my life? Like Maharaj, you often, on Srila Prabhupada's Tirubhav, you read that purport from the fourth canto, how the disciple should die with the guru. And the only reason for the disciple to live is to serve the mission of the guru. And if the disciple can't serve the mission of the guru, what is the point in continuing to live? Or Mahaprabhu, he said, I don't really love Krishna. If I loved Krishna, why would I continue to live without Krishna? Obviously, I have no love. Right? We have, in Vedic times, and Prabhupada wrote even 50 years ago, which must now be 100 years ago, that he knew of a wife who entered the funeral pyre of her husband because without her husband, she thought, what is the use of living? Of course, it became something forced and then became illegal. But if there was service to do, like we have Kunti and Madhuri, so Madhuri entered the fire with Pandu, but Kunti says, I have service to do for my husband. I'm raising his children. And therefore, I will live for service. So I was very inspired by one devotee who told me that before he takes prasadam, he's always praying, my dear Lord, I am eating just to maintain this body for your service. And you know, we have at least two varieties of maya by which we don't take care of things. You know, it's what I call the renunciate maya and the grahastha maya. The renunciate maya is it doesn't belong to anybody. Right? Here I am, I'm staying in the temple, but you know, it doesn't belong to anybody, so I won't take care of it. I won't sweep the floor. I won't change the light bulbs, I won't change the filters, I won't take care of the prasadam that's been sitting here open for the last 3 months because it doesn't belong to anybody. I won't take care of the tires, I won't, you know, it's nobody's. And then you have the grahastha maya, which is it's mine. you know, I'm going to take really good care of the car, and I'm going to take really good care of the house because it's my house and it's my car. So both are illusion. The reality is this body is Krishna's. My room, my home, my car, my clothes, my paraphernalia, they're all Krishna's. Even the people involved in my life, my family members, my friends, or maybe, you know, if you have animals, they belong to Krishna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur would say, you know, this house is Krishna's. I remember many years ago in the old New York temple, 55th Street Temple, so I had, in those days I used to force myself, actually I did this for 35 years, I forced myself to attend class even of people whose classes really bothered me. So I just, like, I have to go to everybody's class every day. So I thought, well, what do I do if I don't like the person's class? So I had read something one sannyasi had written in a Sankirtan newsletter, Mr. Varaswami. He wrote that whenever I go to class, I try to think of some way I can apply something to my own life. I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. So I went to class the next day thinking, okay, I'm going to apply this to my own life. And the person giving class was the temple commander. So here we don't have a temple commander, but it was a big temple, like 300 devotees. He was in charge of the whole temple. So he's giving the whole class about how surrender to Krishna means to surrender to your immediate authority in the temple, which for all of us was him. So, you know, the whole class was about that surrender to Krishna means surrender to me. And I'm sitting there just like, you know, dying. It's going, this is terrible. This is awful. I can't wait to get out of this class. It's driving me nuts. And then I remembered what I had read, and I thought, well, how can I apply this to myself? So we didn't live in the building at that time. We lived two blocks away on 57th Street. And I thought, oh, well, my apartment is also a temple. You know, my husband is the temple commander. Ah, it was like a whole new light for me. It actually was a huge life-changing event for me. Because in those days in ISKCON, we were told that all the householders were in Maya, and, you know, you could just live in the ashram and serve the mission, and if you had your own place and your own money, you were just like a 10th class devotee. And it just like, wow, you know, my child, my husband, my place, it all belongs to Krishna. This is my service to Krishna. Right? So the gopis are epitomizing this, that they're saying, if we can't do any service for Krishna now, we don't even want to live anymore. And what was their service to Krishna? And this is a very, very, very subtle and difficult point. And it's a point that Krishna Das Kaviraj describes in Adi Lila, Chapter 3. That it may seem that the devotees, the pure devotees, are after their own enjoyment. It seems that when the devotees are saying, Krishna, don't leave Vrindavan, Krishna, come back to Vrindavan, that they want to bring him there for their own enjoyment, so they can enjoy him. And it may sound like that with what the gopis are saying now. It may sound like we want to enjoy all these things of Krishna. And of course, this comes up in the Shikshastika, where Mahaprabhu says, when will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? When will my voice choke up? When will the hairs of my body stand on end at the recitation of your name? And one may say, well, actually, Mahaprabhu, in the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, when he's describing this verse, and he says that life without love is worthless and poor. Let me become your servant. And the way Bhaktisiddhanta translates this as, with ecstasy is my pay. So why are the devotees looking for this ecstasy? Oh, Krishna is going to look at us. Now, generally, that's very self-centered, right? I want my husband, my boyfriend, my child, my dog to look at me. Right? This is one of the big reasons why people keep dogs. You all know that, right? One of the huge reasons why people keep dogs. So you come home at the end of the day and the dog is focused on you entirely. You are everything to that dog. I mean, of course it's an illusion, because the dog is only focused on you because you feed it and maintain it. It doesn't really love you. So we could think like that. The gopis are thinking, you know, I want Krishna to look at me. If Krishna doesn't look at me, I'm going to die. And we see this in a mundane form in this world. People wait in line for some movie star, right? Or political figure or whatever. Or maybe he'll look at me. Maybe he'll smile at me. Yes? But that's not what's going on here. Why does a devotee want to feel ecstasy? Let's look at this example with the dog. The dog who's very happy to see the master gives pleasure to the master, doesn't it? Right? That's the rasa. That's why you're keeping the dog. That's why you take it for a walk and stand there while it poops. That's why you clean up its hair all over your house. That's why I think the cost of a dog is about $10,000 a year. You know, that's why you're spending all this money. Why are you doing this? So this dog will be ecstatic when it sees you. Everybody understand this? The dog is exhibiting like symptoms of ecstasy when it sees you. Yes? Everybody see this? Jumps up and down, it licks you, it barks, it wags its tail, and you're like, oh, somebody loves me. Yeah? But that's what we can give to Krishna. What can we give to Krishna? I mean, I know he says, Patram Pushpam Palam Twayam Yome Bhakti Prachati Tadatam Bhakti Paritam Ashvami Twayatatmanaha. But what can we give to Krishna? Now, every day I offer the Lord, you know, incense, and I get this really nice incense. But I mean, is it actually anything compared to what Krishna enjoys in Vaikuntha? Or I get flowers, you know, marigolds have a little bit of scent, right? But a lot of the flowers, like even a lot of the roses, they don't even have any scent. And what kind of food am I mean, it's just like, what am I offering to Krishna? But the thing that he wants is the love. That's what's, the fact that we're excited to see him. The fact that we're thrilled by him seeing us. The fact that aspects of him enliven us, that is the best thing that we can give him. Right? Prabhupada said in the story of Jambavan that Krishna has all the propensities of a human being. And that's not anthropomorphism, it goes the other way. Because Krishna is like that, therefore we as his parts and parcels are like that. The greatest pleasure somebody can give me is to be enlivened and enthused and inspired and happy by something that I am or something that I do. Isn't this true for everybody? That's the greatest thing somebody can give. If someone says, you know, oh, that class you gave or that book you wrote or that thing enlivened me, then I feel that I have meaning in life. Right, the other day I was at Walmart, I had to get a copy of a receipt I lost, and the lady found my purchase from the day before and she printed it out for me and she gave it to me, and I said, wow, you're so competent and together that you were able to do this. And she just lit up like a firework. And then I thought, oh, my life has meaning. I've brought happiness to somebody else. So Krishna also feels like that. So what the gopis here are describing are all called udipanas. They are what stimulates love. And what brings Krishna happiness is when a living being is stimulated to love and joy by him and his associates. There's just nothing else that brings him more happiness than that. So let's go through these. So first is that he's Balaram's friend, Anantasakaha. So, of course, Balaram is also Krishna. He's an expansion of Krishna. But the gopis like to talk about the gopis who are attached to Krishna. Of course, some gopis are specifically attached to Balaram. But the gopis who are attached to Krishna, they like to try to hide because their relationship with Krishna is not socially acceptable. So they like to hide it often by talking about Krishna and Balaram. Oh, Krishna and Balaram are coming home. Oh, there's Krishna, the friend of Balaram. Right? So this also stimulates their love. But in addition, the gopis are very enthused by Krishna's family. You know, ideally, and this doesn't always happen, of course, but ideally, when you marry someone, you also get to like their brothers and sisters and their mother and father and their aunts and uncles. You also like their family. Again, that doesn't always happen. But that's the concept. So the devotees feel love for Krishna by thinking of Krishna's brother, by thinking of Krishna's mother and father and all of his family members. Rupa Goswami has a whole book, Radhakrishna Ganodesh Deepika, where he describes all the different inhabitants of Vrindavan, and he describes in detail many of the different family members of Krishna, like Nandamarja's brothers and their wives and their children. Right? And by meditating on these family members of Krishna. And then they also say that when Krishna comes back in the evening to Vraja. So of course we are told directly by Rupa Goswami in text 8 of the Upadeshamrita that we should be meditating on this Asta Kalila Lila, these different 8 times of the day. And it's fascinating to me that the spiritual world is beyond time, and yet there's 8 times of a day. You know, that all of the pastimes are eternal, and yet there's different pastimes at different times of the day. There's no need of a sun or a moon, but there's different times of the day. There's some sequence of activities, and there's some cycle of activities. So this is very interesting. I once attended a lecture of Shiva Ramaswamy, where he said that we often meditate on what am I going to do, you know, what's on my calendar. Every day I check my calendar, what's on my schedule for today. Or if we have loved ones in another part of the world, we may be meditating on what are they doing today. You know, what time is it in their time zone, and what are they doing? He said, well, we should be doing this for Krishna. What's Krishna doing now? What's Krishna doing at this time of the day? What's Krishna doing at this time of the day? So, you know, the first early time of the day, Krishna is still in the forest with the gopis, and he's getting woken up by the parrots and the monkeys, and Vrinda and her associates, and they're saying, get up, get up, get up! Go home, you're going to get caught! Right? And Krishna and the gopis are rushing home and jumping in their beds and pretending to be asleep. Right? And Mother Yasoda is coming and waking up Krishna, and she looks at him and she says, I don't think your servants gave you a very good bath yesterday. You're dirty. And the gopis who are there are giggling. Right? And then Krishna is taking his bath. Well, before he takes his bath, actually goes and to milk the cows. On the way to milk the cows, he's wrestling with the cowherd boys. And when they wrestle, they get covered with dust. You know how little boys do. The little boys are always there, always pushing and shoving and fighting. And so they're getting covered with dust, and they go to milk the cows. And the cows, even if they see their calves, they won't let down their milk until Krishna comes. And then Krishna sits on a golden milk stool, and he squats down on the stool, and he puts a golden milk pot between his knees, and he's milking the cow. And as he's milking the cow, he's leaning against the side of the cow, and as he leans against the side of the cow, his turban gets askew, and some of his curls fall out of his turban, and some of the drops of milk touch his dhoti, and you can see his color through, you know, how when clothes get wet, they become somewhat translucent, and you can see his color through the drops of milk. And then he goes back into the house. And at this time, the gopis are coming to prepare to cook breakfast. And so as Krishna goes in, sometimes he lags behind Balaram. And he glances at one of the gopis. And all the cowherd boys go to their homes, and they all have a bath, and they get dressed. And then they all have breakfast. And as they have breakfast, they're joking with each other, because Nandamarja doesn't come to the breakfast room. And Madhu Mangal takes all the food off his plate and puts it on another boy's plate, and he tells Mother Yasoda, I'm all done, I'm ready for dessert. Right? And then they get ready to go into the forest. And when they get ready to go into the forest, right, Mother Yasoda, Nandamarja, all the older gopis and gopis, they're just overwhelmed with separation and worry. But Krishna's there with his calves, or later with his cows, and with the boys, and the young gopis are also in separation, but Krishna and the gopis are indicating to each other, we'll meet you in the forest. So they're not in as deep separation as the older members of the village who aren't going to see Krishna all day. So then Krishna and the cowherd boys go into the forest, and they're playing in the forest, and of course, and in this world, they also meet all these shape-changing wizards and demons who interrupt their play. You know, they're in the middle of playing, and they're so absorbed in playing that they forget to eat. It's typical for children, right? But some, you know, huge monster comes in some weird, scary form, and Krishna kills the monster, and then they sit down and eat, and then Krishna says, I want to go see something over there. And he wanders off, and meanwhile the gopis have been getting ready, and so they sneak to the forest, and they have their pastimes, and they're swimming in the ponds, in the Jamuna, and they're playing holi, and they're playing holi in the swing forest, and they're swinging in the monsoon forest, and they're playing water games in the summer forest, and they're wrapping up in warm coats with lots of incense in the foggy forest, and they're going through all the different seasons, and they're playing different games, and then they engage in worship, and then, oops, time to go, you know, the mothers-in-law come, where are my daughters? And then Krishna goes back with the cowherd boys, and the young women go back to the village, and then Krishna and the cowherd boys are going back to the village, and when they get back to the village, the gopis have gotten there first. So when Krishna comes back to the village, then he's in separation from the forest and the forest creatures. And then he does what the gopis are talking about now. He glances at them, a sidelong glance and a smile. Right? And then they have, in the evening, again there's a meal cooked. Right? Again the cows are milked. But then Nandamarj is at the meal, so they're more formal. And then there's entertainment. Every night there's entertainment. There's acrobats and there's dramatic performances, and often dramatic performances are of different pastimes of the Lord. And the men and the boys get so excited at these entertainment that they start whooping it up, Kavi Kandapur says. And then Nandamarj has to ask his constables, hey, tell them to quiet down. So then after the entertainment, Krishna gets ready to go to bed. Right, and Mother Yasoda comes and says, you know, here's some kheer in case you get hungry at night. Right, and then there's moonbeams coming into the bedroom, and the parrots think the moonbeams are rods, and so they try to land on the moonbeams, and Krishna laughs. And he says to Mother Yasoda, you go to your own room. And the servants fall asleep, and Krishna falls asleep. And then he quickly wakes up and sneaks out of his room and goes and meets the gopis in the middle of the night for rasa dancing. So there's these different times of the day going on. And the gopis here are thinking, Krishna's leaving now, how will we reciprocate with him in these different times of the day? And if you think about it, it's meeting and separation, meeting and separation, meeting and separation. Certain times of the day, Krishna's especially with his parents and their associates. Certain times of the day, he's especially with his friends and the cows. Certain times of the day, he's particularly with the gopis. Sometimes he's in the village and he's giving pleasure to all the residents of the village. Other times he's in the forest and he's giving pleasure to all the residents of the forest. Right? When Krishna's in the village, the deer are feeling separation. And when Krishna's in the forest at night, the cowherd boys and the parents are feeling separation. And we talked about this the other day, this meeting and separation. But at each time the devotees are giving pleasure to Krishna. So here the gopis are thinking about a time of meeting after separation. It's a brief separation because Krishna was with the cowherd boys and they came back. They get there before him. But it's a brief separation. And then meeting with these sidelong glances and how Krishna would be so happy that they were happy to see him. Then in the company of the cowherd boys, he's surrounded by the cowherd boys. So Rupa Goswami explains that devotees who have the same mood of love for Krishna, they act as an impetus for our love because they are the shelter of our love. Something like the mother and father of a child are inspired in love for their child by their spouse. Does that make sense to everybody? Or the children are inspired in love for their parents by their brothers and sisters. So we're inspired to love somebody by other people who have a similar love. But what about people who have a very different kind of love? Like a wife can be inspired in love for her husband by the love her husband's parents have for him, or by the love her parents' brothers have for him. But that's a different kind of inspiration. So when the devotees are inspired by devotees who have a different mood, that's called an udipana. It's a stimulus. And Krishna is very, very, very happy when we are inspired in our love for him by other devotees, even who are different from us. Let's think about this very carefully. It's a lot easier to be inspired in our love for Krishna by devotees who are similar to us and have a similar mood and a similar outlook. But it's very difficult, or more difficult, to be inspired by people who have a very different outlook. Yes? This is called unity and diversity. And to see, well, this devotee, their way of worshiping Krishna, their mood of worshiping Krishna, it's not mine. I don't relate to it. But I can appreciate it. I just had a meeting yesterday to look at how we can restructure an old GBC resolution about the fall of the jiva, and how Srila Prabhupada takes three different positions in different places on how the jiva became conditioned. And to allow devotees to be able to have any of these three positions or any combination of these positions. But even in our little meeting, it was very difficult for us in our little meeting to really appreciate people who had a very different viewpoint. It was sort of astonishing to me. Here we were trying to craft the wording of this proposal for a resolution. And we had really a hard time getting out of our Atmaman Manyate Jagat to be able to see another person's point of view and be genuinely appreciative. So Krishna's really, really happy that the gopis are feeling we're inspired to see Krishna when we see the love his friends have for him. We're inspired to love Krishna when we see the cows. They also mention the cows, right? Now, you think they would criticize the cows, because what are the cows doing in this verse? What are they thinking of the cows doing?
Raising.
They're raising a lot of dust. They're making everything dirty. They're making Krishna dirty. So you think they might be critical. They're appreciating that Krishna's getting dirty from the cows. They're appreciating the cows. And what gets dirty from the cows that they're appreciating? To mention two things.
His hair and
his garland. So this hair getting dusty is mentioned in the chapter of Dainukasura. It's also mentioned in chapter 31 when the gopis speak in separation. And of course my immediate remembrance was of Bhishma. When Bhishma was leaving his body, he was remembering Krishna's hair being dirty, not from the cows, but from the war. And of course it's fascinating that Krishna's hair and garland get dirty. Isn't that weird? I mean, in the story in the Mahabharata about Nila and Damayanti, you all know the story, Nila was in love with Damayanti, she wanted to marry, Damayanti was in love with Nila, sorry. They were actually both in love with each other. But Damayanti wanted to marry Nila, and in her Swayamvar, where she gets to choose her husband, she wanted to choose Nila. But she was so qualified that three or four demigods also wanted to marry her. So they disguised themselves as Nila, so she's there, there's like four Nilas in front of her. And the way she knew who was the real Nila was that he was sweating. And his clothes were dirty. Because the demigods don't sweat. You know, we have a low-class body, an earth body. I think of it like a trailer house, you know, or a camper, like you in an RV. You know. But the demigods, they don't sweat. And they don't have to wash their clothes. They don't need to have washing machines. They don't need any washing machines in the heavenly planets. But we hear how Mother Yasoda, she's sweating, right? And Krishna will be covered with sweat, like little drops of sweat. But on Krishna, that's very attractive, that his hair is dirty, that his face is sweaty. The gopis are finding this very attractive. A very manliness of Krishna. and his garlands. Rupa Goswami goes into great detail in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu about all Krishna's different garlands and how they're udipanas for love. And all of Krishna's different hairstyles and how they're stimulus for love. Oh, Krishna has his hair this way, that way, his garland this way, that way. And then, of course, they're talking about Krishna's flute. And Rupa Goswami has a large explanation of how Krishna's flute stimulates love. Of course, in this world, women often fall in love with musicians. But how Krishna's flute challenges Cupid, it defeats Cupid, it breaks the meditation of sages, and it criticizes nectar. And then, of course, Krishna's glances, which are also in the deep. So we are meant to be actually stimulated by everything, to be enthused and excited. My god sister Malati doesn't like the word excited. But to be enthused in our love for Krishna. And this should be everything about the deities, everything about the temple, everything about the devotees. Everything about everything is actually Krishna. Even the things in this world should stimulate our love for Krishna. The dust, even here, the dust, the trees, the birds, the clouds, everything. Everything can remind us of Krishna. I mean, even something as nasty as, oh, I'm sweating. Why am I sweating? Oh, but when Krishna sweats, it's beautiful. Shh, so dirty working out in the garden. Oh, but when Krishna's covered with dust, it's beautiful. And whatever we're experiencing, we can use that as a stimulus to love Krishna. And that is the greatest service we can give to Krishna. And for that reason, we live. That's why we live. That's why the devotee doesn't care. Living, dying, whatever. If I can bring pleasure to Krishna by my being enthused by Krishna, then my life has meaning. So my watch gives 2 minutes, and that clock gives a negative minute, so I don't know if we have any time at all.
1 minute.
That says 1 minute. Anybody have a 1 minute comment?
The word dipana, is that basically inspiration?
Yes, an excitance. Something that will excite you.
What's wrong with the word excitement?
I don't know. She gets so upset about it. But it means an excitement.
Well, it means excitement.
Prabhupada translates it as impelling. Prabhupada uses the word impelling. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.